Welcome on board a daily adventure to discover true wisdom, authentic hope, a stronger faith, and profound joy. Yeah. Hey. This is the Debbie Chavez Show.
You're the shining star, no matter who you are. Shining bright to see, and you can truly be what you can truly be.
Welcome, friends and neighbors. It is wonderful to be back together again with everyone as we journey through this life together toward hope, wisdom, and joy. And coming up today, we're going to talk to women about how we can overcome all the things that cause us to be fearful. And there's a long, long list. And we're going to learn how to overcome those fears and become the confident women that Christ designed us to be. Well, we need our faith built because life can be kind of trying and we can be consumed with worries and fears. And we're going to talk about fear right now with speaker and author Deborah Cody. Hi there.
Hi, Deb. How are you?
I am wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing just peachy fine down here in Tampa. It's lovely today. I was just out on the tennis court a little earlier this morning. It's just fantastic.
Okay, we are a little bit jealous.
I hope so.
I don't think we have tennis court weather here in the Northwest at the moment. But
Oh, I would think not. No.
Okay, well, we'll be happy for you. Well, you've written a great new book called Fear, Faith, and a Fistful of Chocolate.
Yes, ma'am.
I like the chocolate part. Maybe not the fear part as much. And you actually set out to explore what consumes women in terms of fear. You know, what are their fears about? And you, what did you do, a survey of like 500, 600 random women between the ages of 18 and 80? So what were their top fears?
Well, you know, it was surprising to me. I guess I had some preconceived ideas of what I would find based on my own fears.
Yes.
And they were different. They were quite different, actually, than what I applied to myself.
Huh.
Surprisingly, the number one law was fear of, for all women of all of the age groups, and by far it was more than doubled any of the other fears, was loss of a loved one.
Oh.
Which would be spouse, children, or parents.
Wow.
And, you know, I think when we think about it, we all have that fear, but
yes,
it was just kind of interesting how it just popped out in all of the age categories. I had them divided into three different age groups, and it was just, wow, that was way far ahead of everything else.
Huh.
And then number two was debilitating disease or terminal illness.
Like I've got a headache, I must have brain cancer kind of thing.
Exactly,
yeah.
It's a puma.
Yeah.
Number three was fear of failure, which showed up more in the younger age groups, which would make sense because they're just starting out with their careers and with mommying, and they don't want to, you know, mess up and have a whole bunch of little murderer children type things, you know, and
yes,
that we all think that, oh, I'm turning out these little deviants, but, you know, somehow, thanks to the good Lord, prevents that from happening most of the time. And then, you know, with the number four was predominantly in the older age groups, was old age and senility.
Oh, my, like Alzheimer's and just the getting old thing, huh?
Yes, and I guess we face that more as we get, you know,
sure,
in our last half of the century, which I've crossed that magical line myself. So
yeah, me too.
I do understand that that is kind of up in your face, and you do worry about that more.
Yes.
And then I'll just share with you one more of the top ten. Number five was fear of the unknown, or the what ifs. And I tell you, that one there would be up there in my number one.
Yes.
Because those what ifs, they just plague me. They keep me awake night. And,
yes.
You know, all of the faceless fears that I have, I sculpt features on them with the what ifs. And I create their laser eyes and their supersonic ears and their gigantic cavernous mouths that don't even exist.
Yes.
You know, I just have such a good imagination, I torment myself.
Well, and doesn't Satan just help to foster that lovely imagination about the what-ifs?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he knows right where to push our buttons.
Oh, doesn't he, though? And, you know, going back to that number one thing that you said was by far and away the top answer in terms of what women fear, the loss of a loved one, I imagine that could be not just to death, but maybe just like if you're married, loss of your spouse, maybe your husband will leave, find another woman. I mean, it could be loss in a number of different ways, don't you think?
Certainly, certainly. And that one was, I actually had to lump some together. The way the survey was built,
yeah,
I had blanks for people to fill in their own personal fears, and then I had a list of 20 common fears of women, and they were able to rank them 1, 2, and 3, their top three fears, as to what was already there or right in their own. And so because so many people chose that one, but they either said spouse or children or parents. We lumped that together.
Yes, yes. All righty. Now, let's talk about fear for just a second and kind of defining it, because fear is not necessarily always a bad thing, is it? Like, I fear if I walk in the middle of a highway that I could get run over would be a good, healthy fear.
Exactly, exactly. No, fear is definitely not always a bad thing. And, you know, the Lord gave us fear for a reason. You know, fear helps us stay out of trouble a lot of times. You know, so many times if we didn't have fear, we would get into all kinds of mischief. And, mm-hmm. you know, if we didn't have that little fear of failure as kids, we would have never gone to high school. We would have skipped school every other, you know, day. And mm-hmm. if we didn't have that little nagging fear in the back of our mind about that C word, we wouldn't bother to have our bosom squashed, you know, with mammograms. And, you know, so we have to have fear, and the Lord provided us fear for a reason, but it's when it just starts to govern our lives and it begins to dictate our actions and our thoughts. That's when it becomes passion in a negative direction, and it starts to control us. And control, I think, is really the bottom line. That's what fear is all about. Mm. We are afraid we're going to lose control, and we're not so sure deep down inside us that Papa God really is in control.
Yes, and so because we have this fear that's kind of overtaken us, then we get into all sorts of problems, don't we? Well, first of all, it can take a physical toll on your body, your physical health, but also we tend to numb our fear with maybe eating or alcohol or illicit relationships, or, I mean, it gets us into all sorts of trouble, huh?
It certainly does, and that's something that people ask me, and you throw chocolate in the title with fear, you know, because that's my sedative of choice sometimes is chocolate.
Sedative.
But you know, I call myself a choco-athlete, which is the step beyond chocoholic, meaning I exercise just so I can eat more chocolate.
Well, yes. I understand.
But what the chocolate part of the title is, meaning the comfort, the comfort that we seek because of our fears.
Yes.
And the point that I make in the book is that we need to turn to Papa God for that, and that chocolate is a nice little numbing agent for a little bit, but it doesn't do much but add thiolite, you know? So
yes.
we need to look elsewhere for that.
Well, let's delve into several different kinds of fear, and I love how you've broken it down in the book, you know, internal fears, external fears, and let's examine as many as we have time just to kind of see where this stems from, you know, what's the root cause, and then what we can do about it. And one of the first ones you outline is humiliation, kind of like ghosts from the past. And I don't even know if some of these things are, that we recognize them on a conscious level. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think that's one of the, I have fears kind of based in different categories. And that would be one that maybe has been invested us in our past, and it's become part of us. It's kind of a saturating fear, I call it. It's become enmeshed within our personalities because of something that happened in childhood. And we don't necessarily know that that one is there. And I talk about that in the chapter about vultures.
Yes.
And I call them kind of like spiritual vultures hanging over your head, hovering around, waiting to just pick your bones with, you know, the embarrassment or humiliation or, you know, feeling like you don't fit in. And, you know, we all have those vultures, I think, hanging out. And I came to that analogy in my own neighborhood. I do prayer walks around my neighborhood, and one of my neighbors was infested with vultures.
Oh.
And he had these huge, hulking, ugly, horrible thing, creatures up on the roof of his house all lined up.
Oh, my.
And I started thinking, what in the world is that about? They wouldn't hang around if they didn't have something to eat.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about it spiritually. I think our spiritual vultures must be hanging around because we keep them well fed with all of our insecurities and all of our worries. And, you know, and if we didn't, they would just fly away. And it occurred to me as I walked closer to the house to try to snap some pictures of these vultures up there for my blog, and they would first put their giant wingspans out and try to look really menacing and scream at me. And when I didn't go away and I just kept moving closer, they took off. They were out of there. They were intimidated by my presence. And that's exactly the way we have to battle our spiritual vultures. Papa God, they can't stand his presence.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be out of there. They are intimidated. Mm-hmm. He wins, hands down.
Mm-hmm. Good analogy. I love that. Let's talk about another internal kind of fear, the fear of rejection. Oh, and we all, I mean, unless someone's just like Superwoman out there right now, I mean, we all have this fear of rejection, rejection by other women, maybe women in our church, maybe being rejected by your husband, maybe being rejected by your coworkers. I mean, I don't know, whoever. But this fear of rejection, and you tell the story in the book of Philip, who was a perfectionist, and you learn some things from him. Can you tell us a little bit of his story?
Yes, he's really a good friend of mine. We laugh about his story, even though it's really, it's not a funny story. But he, you know, rejection was number 8 on the top 10 fears that women face.
Mm-hmm.
And the story of Philip, he is just obsessed with perfection. And one day I asked him, why? Where did this come from? You know, and he started thinking about it, and he realized that it was from his childhood and that he had never felt good enough. His dad had left his family when he was 2, and he never saw his dad again except one time when he was about 10 or so. He was at a family funeral, and he saw, he'd seen pictures of his dad, so he knew what he looked like. And he saw him starting to walk into the funeral home. And when Philip's dad saw Philip, he turned his back and left.
Oh.
And, you know, how much more rejection can
really?
A body get than that?
Yes.
But I asked Philip then to share with me some of his own things that have come to him, some ideas about how he dealt with the rejection monster.
Yeah.
And I call lots of our fear critters monsters.
Yes.
His was, deal with your anger.
Mm.
Acknowledge that it's there, even if it's buried beneath layers of denial. And so many times that's there, and we don't even act like we're in denial because we're not aware of it. But if you ever think something like, oh, this is so not right, or I have been so judged unfairly, or something like, I wonder how he would feel if I treated him like he's treating me. Well, then you are actually angry.
Yeah.
And you don't realize it, but you're irate.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we, because we think it's not terribly Christian to be so indignant, then we really have a hard time coming to grips with that.
Mm.
But the first step is to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then to accept ourselves and to recognize that we aren't defined by what we do, but whom Papa God designed us to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we're a work in progress.
Yeah, yeah. And you also make the point here, and I think this is something he learned, too, is to listen to the right voice, because we all have one voice speaking at us, you know, the voice of the enemy, just, you know, reaffirming that we are a failure, that we're going to fail, that no one really wants us, no one really loves us, no, you know, we're not worthy. But we can't listen to that voice, can we?
No, that is so true. And, you know, it sometimes we have a hard time discerning which voice is which.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think we have to remember that the things that we fear the most are the things that those are the things that matter to us most. Mm-hmm. Those are the little hidden corners of our life that we trust Papa God the least. And if rejection is one of those, that's a hot spot we need to work on. We don't love ourselves like Papa God loves us.
Yeah.
And we're, you know, we need to not blow everything out of proportion.
Mm.
Because people with a history of rejection tend to read rejection between the lines of everything else, even the simple, innocent things. You know, you think because your friend can't go with you to the concert, she's abandoning you forever. You know, and that's not true. We have to step back and take a little different perspective of it.
Yeah. When we come back from the break, let's talk about external factors here, and let's just talk about worry, because you know, women are some of the most fabulous worriers in the world, so let's talk about how we deal with that on a daily basis. We'll do that with Deborah Cody. Her book is called Fear, Faith, and a Fistful of Chocolate. Back on the program with my guest, Deborah Cody, her book, Fear, Faith, and a Fistful of Chocolate. Ah, yeah, I have some chocolate muffins actually sitting downstairs in my kitchen right now, Deborah.
Ooh, I'm jealous.
Well, they're really healthy muffins that I just have to say. There's 2 ingredients in these homemade muffins. There is a box of chocolate cake mix and a can of pumpkin, and that is it. So actually, I convinced myself that they're very healthy because I'm eating a vegetable, pumpkin, right?
Absolutely. Now, who would have thought of put pumpkin with chocolate? That
See?
Sounds
See?
Interesting to me.
It's like a health food, I'm telling you. Okay, well, I digress. We're talking about your book, Fear, Faith, and Fistful of Chocolate. And we've been talking about fear, but you have a whole section of the book where you talk about worry. And first of all, and we want to talk about, you know, your, I think you call them anti-worry wart tools, and we want to hear about those. But what's the difference between fear and worry?
Well, I think worry is a very, it is pretty much the same. And worry is the result of putting your faith in the wrong place, in yourself instead of Papa God, to figure out everything, maintain the control in your life, and to provide protection from what might harm you. Mm-hmm. And I think that worry is something that women see their parents, their moms, their grandmoms do, and we become very good at it, and we don't know how to live differently. Mm. It becomes a habit, and because it's a habit, it can be unlearned.
Okay.
And that's why I talk about some of the anti-worry wart tools. I mean, really, who wants to be a wart?
I don't think we probably would sign up for that. We have enough problems to deal with, the cellulite and the wrinkles and, you know, sagging body parts. We don't need warts on top of it.
Absolutely. I even talk about some of those in a chapter in the book about, you know, aging, because a lot of people have a definite fear of aging.
Okay, well, let's get to that in a moment, because we need to spend some time on that just by itself. But let's talk about these anti-worry wart tools. So what things do you suggest?
Well, one of the big ones is to postpone worry. And I know that sounds funny because we're so used to just as soon as a nagging thought hits us, we stop and we worry and we worry and we worry some more. We carry it with us all day. But if we can set aside 15 minutes a day as our, call it the DWT, the designated worry time, it will make such a difference.
Wow.
It really does. I've done it, and it's just an amazing idea to do that.
Now, let me unpack that. So what you're saying is, because worry in a small dose where you're really bringing it to God and that kind of thing, and you're talking about it with Him, and, I mean, actually that's not necessarily a negative thing, then, you're saying. Just make sure it doesn't consume your life, and so to kind of whittle it down to this 15-minute segment of your day?
Exactly. There are things that we obviously have to think about, and we have to problem solve, and we have to figure out different ways of tackling them, and we tend to worry and worry and worry. Worry is so unproductive.
Yeah.
You know, prayer is productive, and that's another thing I'll get into just a minute, to worry, morph worry into prayer. But, you know, when we just keep worrying and it continues to consume us, that's when we need to postpone it and just jot down the thing that you need to think about and the thing that is bothering you and irritating you. And then once you've jotted it down, you don't have to keep thinking about it.
Yes.
You bring it to your designated worry time. You pull it out. You sort your worries into two piles, those with outcomes over which you have no control and those that are potentially solvable. And then you give the first pile to the Lord. You turn your back on it and focus on the solvable problem. Once we, work with those, we seek guidance and get advice from other people and get our emotional support from the people we trust, and we come up with an action plan, then those worries will start to diminish as we start putting our plan in place.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that is so doggone sensible. Why didn't I think of that? I like that idea of confining the worry, saying this will be my worry time. And if someone is not comfortable with the word worry, okay, whatever. But I mean, you know, basically the concerns of your life, you know, this is my time that I'm going to just ponder these things. It's going to be a confined time so that my whole day is not, I'm just not one big stress ball, you know. And so I'm confining it to this one time, and I'm sorting it between those things I have no control over, and I'm just bringing those to God, as He tells us to do in Philippians 4. And then the other ones, I'm actually going to ponder for a few minutes, like, what should I do about this? I love that. Now, you've done this, and this works for you?
Yes, if I need to do it every day in every way. But yes, I definitely have tried all these things, and I try to incorporate them into my lifestyle.
Yeah.
And that's how you unlearn the worry habit, is by creating new and healthier and better habits. And that is one that I have been definitely working on, along with a fret fast. I tried a fret fast for 2 weeks, and this was one of the big things that helped me to postpone worry. And it was such a great idea. It freed me up. emotionally and physically, and I felt so much better about myself. And I'm, you know, I'm working on trying to make that a lifestyle rather than just the 2 weeks that unfortunately, it was something that I just wanted to try because I read about it. And I launched into these worry wart tools every time I started to fret. And then by the end of those 2 weeks, my emotional outlook was so vastly improved.
Wow.
It was unbelievable to me.
Love it. Now let's talk about anxiety, which again, some of these words seem very much like they overlap, you know, fear, worry, anxiety. Would you just define anxiety for us so that we know what you're talking about?
Well, the chapter that I write about anxiety is actually very serious. The anxiety, I have several friends and I myself have had some experience with anxiety attacks. Mm. Thankfully, mine hasn't been as severe as many people's that are diagnosed, you know, with anxiety. Mine, I call them mini anxiety attacks.
Okay.
But they usually have to do with sometimes there's triggers and there's things that set them off. It can be something from your past. Or
yes.
something, a fear that you have, a phobia that you have, or sometimes it's something you eat. It can be that triggers your anxiety, and it's a worry that it gets out of hand. It usually includes physical ailments, a lot of symptoms, and I go into that very much in the book and talk about those and some things you can do about them. Because sometimes we feel so helpless when we get into that anxiety where we just your heart. Pounding, you're sweating, you really don't know what to do with yourself, you're pacing, and you just are filled with this, it's like a monster that's out of control, it's like a tidal wave that crushes you under it. So it's a worry to a tenth degree.
Yeah. So what has been helpful for you with this one?
Well, for me, I have to stop a minute and think about, a first thing is to recognize I'm in it, because that, for me, I guess I'm just I just kind of coast along, and I don't really think about what I'm feeling or why so many times.
Sure.
So I have to stop and say, okay, I'm shaking like a leaf. My hands are poised above the keyboard, and they're just trembling. I'm sweating. I can hardly stay seated. What is going on here? And I get my little mini anxiety attacks when I sit down to write a lot of times.
Oh.
And I have to then think, okay, what's going on here? So I remove myself from the room, my writing room, I go take a total change of scenery, go out, take a prayer walk, breathe in and out the love of my Lord for me. I get my emotional and my spiritual tank filled up, and then I'm able to come back in and realize, okay, this is my job, this is what I'm doing, I can do this, and He is here to help me do this, so I'm not alone.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I go over some things in the anxiety chapter that I think would be very helpful for people. You know, sometimes, of course, you end up at doctors and they want to give you lots of medicine and counseling and all. And I actually quote Patsy Claremont, who had terrible troubles with anxiety to the point where she was bedridden.
Mm.
And her story is wonderful. Hers came down to she was totally out of life, basically. She was a living corpse.
Wow.
And she couldn't get out of bed, much less leave her house. And she was able to finally start to turn things around when she heard the Lord give her this very small three-word directive. And she was able to start following it. And it was something that sounds simple, and it was, but it was doable for her. It was, make your bed.
Make your
and if
bed.
She was up making her bed, she couldn't be in it.
Oh.
And so to her, when she had hot, she was so fearful of so many things, she realized, I can do that.
Yeah.
That's something I can do.
Mm.
And so she started with little steps, little baby steps, and she was able to eventually overcome her agoraphobia and all her terrible fears that had compounded and just kind of dictated her entire life up to that point.
Wow. Wow. Make your bed.
Yeah.
Who would think that would be the remedy, you know, or the start of the remedy. Yeah.
You know, if you know Patsy, then you realize that that's just perfect, you know, some simple thing like that, that she can parlay that into a spiritual, you know, victory.
Yeah.
Make your bed.
Mm, love it. Okay, when we come back from the break, let's get to some other of those top fears that the women identified in your big old survey, like loss of a loved one, death. And let's talk about that. Let's talk about the old age thing. Let's talk about the fear of the unknown, which I think was number five, just those what ifs. What if this happens? What if this happens? What if this happens? Yeah, not that I could possibly identify with that. We'll be back in just a moment with my guest, Deborah Cody, her book, Fear, Faith, and a Fistful of Chocolate.
The Debbie Chavez Show, your source for biblical wisdom from the country's top pastors, counselors, and authors, and your home for inspiring true stories displaying Christ's redeeming power.
We are back with popular speaker and author Deborah Cody, her book Fear, Faith, and A Fistful of Chocolate. And I thought we should explore the aging thing just because, well, I can relate to it, and apparently so can you, as we're both past the, 50-year mark?
Yes, we're sweetly ripened. That's
yes,
the way I like to look at
that's
it.
That's one way of looking at it. Hopefully not quite shriveled up like a raisin in the sunshine,
no.
But, you know, yeah. So, any thoughts there about how we deal with this fear of the aging process when everyone else is, you know, we're surrounded by these people that are getting, you know, breast implants and they're getting, you know, facelifts and they're doing all these things, and do we have to do that too?
No, I think we can just laugh a little more than they do.
Okay.
You know, I look at old age, and I call that very loosely because I'm not old and you aren't either,
no.
But... you know, there's things that we do that we see that we don't see at other times in our lives. And a couple of things that I talk about in my book are, for instance, the oops that occurs. And that's the obstinate orca propagation site.
What?
Oops. Yes, indeedy. You know those little humpback whales that grow on the outside of your upper thighs, right?
Oh.
Where they attach to your hips?
Yes.
One morning, you're 55, you wake up, and oops, there they are.
Yep.
Your beached orcas.
Oh.
Refusing to turn to the open sea.
Oh.
Well, I even named mine. Mine are Shamu and Shazam.
Oh, goodness.
And I think that it's a good thing to be on a first-name basis with your appendages if you're going to do life together. And I feed mine M&Ms instead of plankton.
Uh-huh, yes.
And, you know, there's other things that I've noticed with old age. For instance, the increasing gravity phenomenon, which
yeah.
I can't believe it hasn't made the front page of the news.
Oh.
But, you know, the evidence is right there on the back of your arms and hanging off your chin.
And other places.
You
know,
and,
like,
you
what's
know,
happening?
It's so obvious. It's you recognize it the most when you're undressing for bed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's based on the theory that the magnetic core of the Earth is sucking everything loose toward it. Like one of those vacuum tubes at the dentist's office that, you know, when you put
uh-huh.
your lips around it, it pops your eyeballs out of their sockets and
right.
would just suck your tongue right down if it wasn't attached back there by your hanging ball. Well, that's the increasing gravity phenomenon that it also produces the chicken neck maneuver.
What?
And that is why I think so many of us older women kind of have a problem with kyphosis, which is hunchback.
Yeah.
It's because we're subconsciously trying to hide the majority of our chin
oh.
by rounding out our shoulders and protruding our heads forward. So we get this kind of chicken neck maneuver thing going.
Oh, so true. And we could go on and on with the list of problems. But how do we deal with this fear then? Because, you know, we live in a society that esteems the youthful look, that maybe has some alterations done cosmetically. But, I mean, you know, how do we compete with that? What do we do with this?
Well, that's a good question, and I think every woman has to go through that at their own. They have to find their own answer to that. You know, I like to delve in the scriptures and apply them to even my fear of aging. You know, for instance, Isaiah 41:10, don't be afraid, I am with you. Don't tremble with fear, I am your God. I will make you strong as I protect you with my arm and give you victories. And I think we need victories even over things like when our bodies begin to fail and when our memories begin to slide away and we can't quite do the things we used to and we have so many more aches and pains. And I think that Papa God is right there to comfort us. And, you know, he created chocolate for that reason. And,
yes.
you know, I have a lot of scriptures in the book, and I have a couple of chapters even in all of my books. This is actually Fear, Faith, and A Fistful of Chocolate. It's the third book in the series
yeah.
called Take on Life.
Mm-hmm.
And the other two books prior to this deal with stress,
mm-hmm.
Too Blessed to be Stressed. And then one is about self-control, which, oh,
mm-hmm.
boy, do I have a problem with
oh,
too.
Me too.
And that's more beauty, less beast.
Mm-hmm.
But I fill those up with lots of scripture and lots of applications to kind of show how we can make Scripture part of our lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we have to. I mean, otherwise we will be floundering around and trying to do all sorts of things, hijinks to try to look a certain way, be a certain way. And yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we have to just put our trust in God and know this is a temporary dwelling place, these bodies we have. Let's talk about the number one fear of women, that they will lose a loved one, you know, to death or to divorce or whatever it might be. How do you propose that women handle that fear in particular?
Well, I think that's tied in a lot with the fear of loneliness, which I think we all have that deep down inside, where we don't want to do life alone, and
right.
we don't want to be by ourselves, and losing people that we love just wrenches our hearts. And it also takes us to the point where we question our faith so many times.
Yes.
And that is such a hard place to be. I have been there. You've been there, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a desert time, and we dread that. We don't want to be there. But we all need to be there, because that's what grows our faith. And that's where we get to the point where we default to trust rather than fear when we face things that are hard and
yes.
things that we don't understand, or anything that we just can't comprehend. It's not normal for us. It's out of the ordinary. We tend to default to fear.
Yeah.
And I think that's why we have to go through those things, because Papa God uses those to grow us.
Mm-hmm.
And we end up, you know, one of the points I make in the book, I give some scripture that we need to memorize these scriptures so we have them right there to use in our arsenal when we need them, because we're not always going to have our Bible handy. We're not going to have other people who know scriptures that we can ask. We need to have them in our own hearts, and we need
yes.
to be able to pull them out at the drop of a hat when we need them.
Mm.
And I think that's how we end up hearing from Papa God. You know,
yeah.
he talks to us through
mm-hmm.
his word,
mm-hmm.
and we need to be able to access that.
And, you know, this fear of losing a loved one, a husband, a child, a parent, whatever, whoever, you know, to death. Or divorce, I guess, but we'd include that too. You know, to me, sometimes this comes down to that I have to come to the painful realization that I've almost turned that relationship into an idol, almost like I can't survive if this person is not in my life, which, you know, and of course, if someone loves that you love dies, I mean, of course that's sad, and God would know that you were going to grieve. But if I've put all my energy into that one relationship and almost put God on a shelf somewhere, no wonder I'm floundering and in fear about losing this person, because I've made them my everything. And that happens really often for women, don't you think, that we turn these relationships into our idols?
Yes, that is an excellent point, Debbie. It's very true. And I hate to see women become so dependent on other people, which we tend to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of our nature,
mm-hmm.
to pour ourselves out
yes.
through loving everyone
yes.
else but
yes.
us.
Right.
And we forget that what we really need is dependency on God.
Yes.
We don't need independency from Him. We need dependency on Him.
Mm.
And then we will be less dependent on the other people in our lives,
yeah.
the other loved ones.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, we're going to take one more quick break. And when we come back, we're going to hit two last things here before we just plummet a time. One is that big old fear of the unknown, which I think you said was like number five or something on the, or no, maybe it was higher than that. I don't know. It was up there somewhere in terms of the top fears of women, the fear of the unknown, the what ifs in life. And that'll be a great segue into negative self-talk. We can all relate with that. So we'll get to that in just a moment with my guest, Deborah Cody, her book, Fear, Faith, and a Fistful of Chocolate.
If you've been helped by this program, please consider making a tax-deductible donation to help us continue providing the Debbie Chavez Show. You can give securely online at faithplace.org.
All right, final minutes with my guest, Deborah Cody, her book, Fear of Faith and a Fistful of Chocolate. So let's talk about this vague kind of fear, this fear of the unknown, which you say is really the what ifs. And oh, man, I don't know about you, Deborah, but this is the big trap for me. The what if this happens? What if that happens? So how do we get a handle on this thing?
Well, I kind of view the what ifs as, do you remember the Lucy show where she decided to bake her own bread?
Yeah.
And she wasn't sure that one little pinch of yeast would be enough, so she dumped in like half the box. And then when she came back, lumpy dough with just oozing all over everything, which just popped out everywhere and just became this huge, crazy, out-of-control thing. And I kind of think that that's what the what-ifs are. They're like Uber yeast, you know, and the best way out of that big, globbing, overwhelming terror that they can cause us is to recognize that the fear rising process, it has begun, and then we have to intervene by redirecting our thoughts to that which is reflected in Philippians 4:8, that which is optimistic, hopeful, and Christ-centered.
Yes.
And I kind of have a little acronym that helps with that. When fear jumps the creek bed and begins flooding the banks of your life, it's time to build a dam.
Ooh.
D is damage control. That's when you name it. You give your fear a distinctive face, because we deal with what we can see much better than what we can't see. And that's why the what-ifs are so haunting for us. A, attach a bit. Steer your thoughts away from the image of your fear that you've pictured, and then move it in a different direction. And that's why it's so important to default to a key scripture. And I give some suggestions for real helpful ones. And then the M in DAM is manage your fear. Make good choices about the books, the magazines, the movies you see, the people you listen to, what you input into your fear. And that can definitely help that Uber yeast to be contained.
Okay, and finally, in our last two or three minutes here, let's talk about that negative self-talk. Because, oh boy, we are so famous, aren't we? Most women, well, probably all people, men, women alike, constantly talking smack to ourselves and all that kind of thing. And I love your acronym for dealing with this particular thing. Your acronym is BARF.
Yes, indeedy. I had to use that this very morning. I wish I had more time. I would tell you this horrendous story where I was just, all my ugliness was laid out on the table this morning in my tennis match. It was terrible. Everything went wrong, and I just reacted. And I said to myself, okay, Debbie, time to barf. B is back off. Step away. I turn my back on the problem. Take a deep breath. Let the Lord fill you. And then A, admit what it is. Again, we have to say, I'm the world's worst at not realizing what I'm feeling.
Yes.
Put a name to it. Put a face to it.
The emotions that you're feeling.
Exactly.
Okay.
And R, redirect. Redirect it. Once you've finally named it, then redirect it into a godly place. But use your scripture that you default to. Turn it to the Lord. He will definitely help you redirect it. And the last for F, barf, is F is for forgive. And that's like the hardest part. Because then you have to forgive the person that offended you and yourself.
And yourself.
So important, because if you don't, then you will just be you'll be consumed by that. So the anger will win. You can't let the anger win.
Well, and you know, you mentioned a key thing there, forgive yourself. And often the negative self-talk is about how much of a loser I am. I'm always going to be fat. I can't seem to lose weight. You know, blah, 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 blah. I'm not smart enough. You know, everyone's going to know that I'm not a good mother. You know, I don't know, whatever it is. And we beat ourselves up. How do you forgive yourself? I mean, I bumped into so many women who say, well, I can't forgive myself.
Well, you know, that's a hard, very hard thing, and there's no easy formula to that. But a real big thing is getting away from your everyday, turn away from what you do every day. Give yourself what I call a he and me retreat, where you turn off the cacophony of the everyday, and you spend at least 2 to 3 hours. It's even better if you can do it 2 to 3 days in a quiet place with just you and the Lord. Take your Bible, take your journal, and let him speak to you. And you will find a way to then be refreshed. And you'll like yourself. You'll be able to forgive yourself better, because you'll feel his love firsthand, and he will pour that into you.
This has been so excellent. But now my real question that remains, can I eat the chocolate without any fears?
You betcha, sister.
Because I have a chocolate muffin with my name on it downstairs.
Oh, I think you need to squish one in an envelope and send it to me now. I'm drooling all over my telephone.
Well, you're going to have to try that. It's so easy. I mean, it's the simplest thing ever. You just take a chocolate cake mix and a 15-ounce can of pumpkin, and you mix it, and you put it in muffin tins, and you bake it for 20 minutes at 350 degrees. So there you go. There's my little helpful hint.
I'm standing here holding a chocolate cake mix and a can of pumpkin in my hand. As you were talking, I went to my cupboard, and I've got them right here.
Excellent. Perfect, perfect, perfect. Well, thank you for joining us. We so appreciate it, Deborah. And we'd like to make some copies of this book available. If you'd like a free copy, email producer@debbychavez.com and ask for the book Fear, Faith, and a Fistful of Chocolate. And until we meet again, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in Him.